Well, welcome to the 90th running of the Indianapolis 500. I'm Pat Sullivan with another IndyCast. Well, few men know A.J. Foyt better than Cecil Taylor. Their days go back to the Sprint Car and Midget Worlds back in Cecil's native Kansas City. We had a minute or two to talk with Cecil about his long association with Supertex. Cecil, you've been involved with A.J. Foyt for a number of years. Talk about your first associations with A.J.
1966. Weekends, vacations, as an engineer for AT&T. I'd been working for Parnello Jones from 62 to 66, and AJ kept trying to get me to come to work for him. Said I was with the wrong guy, and so I came to work for him in 66, and I helped the Morales brothers with Joe Leonard's car, and that was the first years for him.
But your association with him goes back to your old sprint car midget days, do they not, in the Midwest?
Yeah, I saw A.J. win his first midget race in Kansas City in 1957. 1956, I met him at Hutchison, Kansas. We had a sprint car running up there. He and the guy that was driving our car, Don Hutchison, got tangled up. A couple of kids trying to win, and my man ended up going over the fence and was killed. But we got ready to... He's putting him in the ambulance, and A.J. come walking up, tire tracks over his uniform. How bad is he? And I said, he's pretty bad. Anyway, he went to hospital with us, and that's where I met A.J. Foyt.
And, of course, you had a long association with midgets, sprint cars, and I believe also in drag racing with Kansas City International Raceway.
How'd you know that?
Because you used to work with my father.
They came out with a magazine of the 50s and 60s drags, the Hot Rod magazine. Did you see that?
Yeah.
I'm in there in my 2017 bucket that I built when I was in the service down in Texas.
This has been a long association. Again, we go back to 1966. You've also worked with A.J. Foyt the Fourth. What have been your primary responsibilities with Foyt Racing?
Primarily tires and the electronics.
Well, let's talk about the tires, because that's often a very overlooked aspect of just organizing the tires, selecting the right tires, paying attention to what needs to go in that race car. That's where the contact is with the track.
I think in our case, it's not so much selecting the tires as trying to do with the tires that AJ wants done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a particular air pressure, a particular stagger setup. That's all it amounts to, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty automatic as far as Firestone or Goodyear. They mount the tires for you and balance them. Your job is to check and make sure they're what the boss wants. AJ's not always right, but he's always the boss.
Well, you've been able to manage that temperament over the years. Obviously, you know what takes him kicking. Not everyone can work for AJ Foyt.
He's just very intense with what he's trying to do. He wants everybody to think like he does. If you don't, then there comes some four-letter words to get your attention, not to be meant as a personal insult.
Mm-hmm.
All he wants you to do is think like he does. As soon as that's over with, 2 seconds later, he's pinching you on the rear end or squirting your disc brake fluid. That's an I'm sorry, that's not in his vocabulary.
And you've done that over the years,
yes.
And you've shared that intensity.
Yes, yes. Well, it's, you know, it's contagious. And you want to be enthusiastic about what you're doing, no matter whether it's business, broadcasting, racing. If you enjoy what you're doing, you'll be outstanding at it. If it's just a job from 8 to 5 and payday, you'll always be mediocre at it.
Were you hauling midgets and sprint cars and going places like the old Jeff Fairgrounds in Kansas? Did you ever manage and you would be at Indianapolis
no.
and be here all these years?
No, no. When Parnelli called me in 62 and wanted me to do the engines for them because they'd seen some of my stuff running, I never had any idea about coming up here and working. Like when I'd get out of high school, they used to come up here and hang on the fence the outside of the garages and be here for 2 weeks just watching. And my parents always wondered if there was something wrong with me for doing that. But it's just one of those things. It was never in my family, just something that you like to do. And we all look alike, but we're definitely all different.
When was the first year you came to Indianapolis that you can recall?
Oh, gosh. I guess as soon as I got out of the service, that was 57. I was in Navy Air for 4 years. I'd come up here and hang out and just look around, but never had the idea of ever coming working here.
40 years now for you.
Yeah.
Special?
Very, very
yeah.
special. You wonder where that time went.
Uh-huh.
You talk about it, it seemed like a long time, that you look back and see all the changes that have been made. It's been very interesting to see how we've come along with the garage arrangement, how we've come along with the cars. The only thing I'm disappointed with is they've taken away, there's no innovators anymore. The cars are all pretty spec, got to be just so-so. When the innovation was going on, there was a lot of interesting things happening in the automotive world as a result of guys like George Bignotti, Johnny Paulson, some of those guys.
What are the things that you see that are different now that you would consider good changes?
Oh, I think the safety aspect, with the fuel cells, the way they've got the cars built now to where they won't fold up quite so easy and hurt somebody, and yet they still absorb the impact if they crash.
Different personalities you've worked with. What was it like to work with Parnelli Jones?
He was always with us. Of course, it was a different era. These guys today, they've got commitments, they've got endorsements they have to be, that we'd run all day and then we'd have to pull the engine out at night and I'd go through it and freshen it up because we didn't have that one engine. Today, they just pull the engines out. You're not allowed to touch them. The factory takes care of the engines. But we'd be here working till maybe midnight. Parnell would be over there working out on his steering wheel hooked up to a shock absorber. About 8 o'clock at night, he'd say, I'm hungry, let's go get something to eat. We'd go eat, and we'd go out here to the rock quarry and swim for an hour or so, and then come back about 10 o'clock and finish the engine up. It's a different era. But it was always fun because he was always with you.
Do you miss that era?
Sure I miss it. But I know nothing stays the same. It's and there's no place for it today.
So you came in really at the beginning of the rear engine revolution,
yeah? Yes, yes. 65, I think, when the first car was up here. That first Lola. And then it just went on from that, and it's just been kind of an interesting thing to watch because I didn't think the rear engine car would work there.
What do you think about the technology now? I know it's not as innovative, at least for the guy turning the wrenches, but do you have an appreciation for the technology
we have? It used to be that the chief mechanic and the people who worked with him, there were no specialists. Today we've got an engineer who takes care of this, an engineer who takes care of that. We've got people that just work on the rear end of the car, other people that just do the front end, the steering geometry. That used to be just something that you were supposed to know if you come in to work on the car. Like AJ said, we win as a team or we lose as a team. If we have people in here working on the car and all at once we need to clean the place up, everybody grab a broom or a rag or something and clean the place up, including him.
Now, given the fact that you've been in the transition from AJ as a driver to an owner, have you needed to be the go-between between the drivers and AJ and tell them what he's like?
No. Now, he makes that very clear. Like I say, he's not always right, but he's always the boss.
Yeah.
And there's a certain way he likes to have things done. I think the only thing that's frustrating for AJ is the fact he used to be able to get in the car and go out and shake it down. Get the car ready, then he'd tell the driver, like George Snyder or someone, the car's ready to go. George would jump in the car at the last minute on the last qualifying day, qualify the car with no practice, simply because AJ had been in it and pronounced the car as good.
Right.
Today he has to do that with communication, and that's not always the best way to do things.
Now, drivers have different commitments today, and we know that. But are the drivers, in terms of their personalities, their temperaments, their desire to drive, are they the same?
Yeah, I think they're pretty much the same. Sometimes I see we have a driver that comes in that doesn't have any racing experience. But he's got a suitcase full of hundreds. He wants to drive a race car, and we walk up and they say, yeah, we could use the money. Put him in the car, let him go out and make a shakedown run. If he's able to pass all the requirements and the observer says okay, now he's qualified to run an Indy. You used to have to do that on your merit. You run a midget, sprint car, dirt car. We'll put him in an Indy car. That's the only thing I've seen that I don't know if that's good or not.
But this experience overall has been good for you for 40 years.
Oh, yeah. I'm still doing it, and I know I guess it's time to step aside and let the young guys have it, but AJ called me and wanted me to go to Japan with him. He told him, I want you to go, Well, as long as he's taken time to have me as part of his operation, that's a compliment to me that I'm really proud of.
40 years at the Speedway, Cecil Taylor. a great story. This has been Pat Sullivan with another IndyCast.